Vincolati ad ascoltare il mare, quanto tempo siamo stati senza fiatare.
It is 9 a.m. in the West Coast and it is 12 noon at the East Coast. It is 7 p.m. in Jerusalem, Israel, and today is September 2nd, 2015, and this is Orly Benny David Davis with A Possible Truth. Today on BBC Radio, I can't believe myself. BBS Radio. Today on BBS Radio, we are going to talk about the visit of Israel Premier to Florence, Italy, and Milan, and his meeting with the Italian Prime Minister Matteo Renzi, and what cooperation that we have in technology, and what kind of association, and what the repercussion of that visit was as far as the news on discovery of gas in Egypt. And more, we're going to touch base and look at what's the condition in the immigration in Europe. And we're going to have more Italian music, like it's our Wednesday, as usual, with Italian music. And we're going to just think about what we're going to do, you know, in the new year, because the Jewish people have a new year right now. And with all this attention from all around the world right now to this area, we need to focus, because there are some that, you know, the drama of wars are for them. And Europe, having all those immigrants, surely is not happy. So let's see if we can manage to talk about something interesting as such. Anyway, let's get started with some music, and then we're going to go to the video, to the audios of Prime Minister, the press conference of the premiers in Italy.
Rimarranno l'incollato, che sei veramente, cioè, guarda, facciamo primo, mentre però tu fai il primo piano, io canto più bella cosa che c'è, dai.
La canto?
Sì, primo piano di Monica per un minuto a partire da questo momento.
Sono passati solo 10 secondi.
All right, then we are back. This is Orly Benny Davis with Impossible Truth on Wednesday, all Italian music. But we have some European news coming. And last week, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu visited the Prime Minister of Italy, Matteo Renzi. And they were talking about collaboration and cooperation as far as technology goes. And we have some press conference from there.
Thank you, my good friend, Prime Minister Matteo Renzi. I want to thank you for the extraordinary hospitality you've shown me and my wife and my delegation. And I have to tell you that your visit to Israel made a great impression. All the people of Israel were moved by your historic speech in the Knesset. I've heard many speeches in the Knesset. Yours was one of the exceptional ones that touched on basic truths that bind our two countries and our common civilization. Equally, I was enormously impressed by my visit to the Milan Expo. It's a testament to the creativity of the people of Italy and to your leadership. And I look forward to discussing with you this evening how we can further expand the cooperation between Israel and Italy in technology, in agriculture, in culture, in science, in fighting terrorism, in security and stability for our world. There's a simple rule that is absolutely critical for the future of our societies. The future belongs to those who innovate. Italy has always been at the forefront of creativity. You only need to stand in this amazing hall next to the paintings of Vasari and the statues of Michelangelo to understand how creative and how powerful Italy has been over the centuries and today. Israel, in turn, is a global hub of technology. And I think that together we can innovate more than separately, both for the benefit of our two peoples, but also for the benefit of other peoples. And specifically, we discussed in Israel, and I hope to we'll continue this tonight, how we can expand our cooperation in African countries that yearn for our expertise. It's a great pleasure for me to visit you in your hometown of Florence. I think the first time we met, you came as mayor of Florence. And Florence is clearly one of the world's most magnificent cities. It has left an indelible mark on our common civilization. And that civilization today is under threat from militant Islam. The savagery of the Islamic State of ISIS captures the world's attention, and justifiably so. But I believe that a far more serious threat is posed by another Islamic State, the Islamic State of Iran, and specifically its pursuit of nuclear weapons. Let me make clear, Matteo, that Israel doesn't oppose a civilian nuclear program in Iran. We oppose a military nuclear program in Iran. And regrettably, the deal with Iran allows it to keep an expanded and a formidable nuclear infrastructure that is completely unnecessary for civilian nuclear purposes, but is entirely necessary for the production of nuclear weapons. This deal will give Iran, within 13 years, the ability to make as many centrifuges as they want, enrich as much uranium as they want, to whatever level that they want. And this will put the Iranian Islamic State that practices terrorism worldwide, it will put it on the threshold of an entire nuclear arsenal. And well before that, Iran will get hundreds of billions of dollars of sanctions relief and investments to fuel its aggression and terrorism in the Middle East, in North Africa, and beyond that. I think that this will make Iran far richer and far stronger militarily, and it will make it far more difficult to confront its nuclear ambitions in the future. Prime Minister Renzi, Matteo, today your country and all of Europe face a wave of increasing illegal immigration. Thousands upon thousands flee the horrors of militant Islamic terrorism in Libya, across the Middle East, and in Africa. This is a great tragedy and a great challenge. We both want to see greater security in the Mediterranean region and beyond. We are committed to building a better world where our children can enjoy peace and prosperity. And I believe this is what the people of Israel and the people of Italy expect from us both. And this is what we shall discuss in the spirit of the wonderful and growing friendship between us. I believe we can help each other. I believe we can help Italy and Israel. I believe that together we can help the world. And I want to thank you once again for, well, it's a warm friendship and a warm greeting. I didn't expect it to be this warm, but it is extraordinary, and your city is extraordinary. Thank you. Thank you, Matteo. Thank you all. Thank you.
Ellie, and I'm proud to be
I guess that we are on. I heard the voices, but okay, somebody, the video is done. And it was Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu talking about the friendship that Israeli and Italian are cultivating. Now, it's not a secret, you know, that Europe was always leaning toward, you know, the Arab side. The Arab side was the one that came with the money, bought a lot of goods. You know, I remember those days in Italy where we used to sell gold and jewelry to the Arabs who gets married, and they come and, you know, and they purchase and they become, you know, the best investors, you know, in buying stuff, and they cater to them. But then there was a choice. They needed a choice to know which way to go. And since I think that the shift was in 2001 when the Twin Tower fell and, you know, got destroyed by terrorists, Europe, you know, shrunk. She was really puzzled how it could happen. And there are some people did the change, and the Italian just took a stand and stand with the world, and that's it. And from now then on, they had a clear vision. They want to live happily. They are not allowing people to blow each other up, and they don't stay for that. And it's, which makes sense at all, but I told them that for the first time I could see that they're in the right side of history, because their history always shows that they were in the wrong side, especially in Second World War, which, you know, it depends on your leader. If you have a good leader, it'll take you in good direction. If you have a bad one, it's going to be on the wrong side. So if you think that the leader represents the people, you better believe it. If the people choose a good one, it means that it's going to be a good one. So I bet that that they learned their lessons, and they went and they came about to use, you know, all what they have to collaborate. And now, when there is an extreme time everywhere in Europe, they are actually reaching out and probably with results, especially with the incredible system that they have of technology, of everything. And last night, I'm very happy to announce that the top chef of Israel was an Italiano. He was Italian, Massimiliano. Don't remember his last name, but he cooked incredibly, guys. If you see Italian cooks, it's out of the book. It's amazing. So, yeah, he was a Michelin star, kind of. And, of course, everybody were very excited about it. I hope that I wish him success, because it was an easy competition. Let's go on and get some more music. It's about 20 after, almost, and we'll talk later. All right? Let's go back to some music.
Basta un niente, un nome, una calligrafia, perché ogni cuore ha una memoria tutta sua. Si vede sempre dove strappi via una pagina, come ti fissa una fotografia di ieri. La stagione delle piogge arriva qua, alla stazione della mia malinconia. E scende il tiepido acquazzone di una lacrima sull'ultima tua voce che ho in segreteria.
All right, and we are back. That was Claudio Biglioni, and it probably will be a song on the next concert that is going to take place, one of the most incredible concerts that is going to be in Europe this year. It's going to take place in September 10th, 11th, and 12th, and 14th, wow, in Rome. Italy at Foro Italico, you know, the big stadium where they all, you know, beat the Italian, beat Italian soccer always. It's amazing. They play the soccer. I know that the World Cup games were, I don't know, were examined or something. Anyway, it's one of the things that, one of the places that represent a lot of sportsmanship, and Claudio Baglioni and Gianni Morandi, the big names of the Italian music, are joining forces for a message to the world, a message of Capitani Coraggiosi. You know, they're asking our captains to be courageous. The courage to make a decision in this time, it takes a lot. And they are doing it. So God bless them all. And I wish them the best of success. And I hope it's going to be fantastic. You know, a good, calm, wonderful September day in Rome sounds just like the ticket. All right. That was that. And let's talk about what's going on in the rest of the world. You know, the Italian revealed, revelation that they are playing nice. It's good. Now, as far as the Israeli goes, they came back to learn that the Egyptian found a resource for gas, and what happened? They just dropped all the shares of the Israeli gas because Israeli found gas, but still debate is to give it away or get the half of it. They really don't have a clear mind. It's really ridiculous because you should have a clear mind of what you're doing, especially when you're dealing with so much money and its natural resources. The same goes, you know, let's go back, jump back to Europe. Now that they are having so many immigrants banging on the door of Hungary, you will ask what they have to do, and they're closing the door there. And I've been working on researching a little of the European Union. You know, something that I do is always when you take a news from me, I need to know history about it. And the history of the European Union, maybe I mentioned it in the last time, but it still bothered me, so I'm going to repeat it, okay? Because we were talking about, I mean, what's going to happen to those immigrants, and what's the stature about, getting in people from over? And the fact of the matter that we have an Article 52 of the European Constitution, which is that they're writing it since 2002, in February 2002, with the accession of 10 additional countries to the European Union, approached a new body, the Convention of the Future of Europe, was charged with drafting a constitution that would define the rules for political life in the European Union of 25 or more member states. All right, so they decided to draft a resolution. Not a problem, but that resolution is a little funny because on Article 4, you might find that there is a second paragraph that says, the EU funds that represent a more substantial interest for the Church, however, are those for humanitarian aid, foreign development, poverty eradication, and combating social exclusion. Foreign development? What does it mean? What does it mean? And how it gets inside this European Union constitution? When you talk to me about the situation in Europe and you're saying that Greece and Italy and Spain and Portugal almost capitulate. I'm asking, okay, so what happened? He said, you have to give dues every month. Remember, every month you have to give dues, like belonging to the country club. Now, what those dues are doing? 20%, 25% of all AIDS patients are cared for a Catholic health care provider. You understand, by Catholic. I'm sorry. I'm getting excited when I see bigotry just in my face. I can't tolerate it. I can't imagine that nobody read that before, or nobody pay attention, or nobody actually said something. And if you're not Catholic, what does it mean? Only the NGOs and all the charitable work in the name of the Christian value with the money of non-Catholic with the Vatican, which is contradiction. So what I'm seeing is, I'm seeing the European Union that is actually, designated to one kind of religion. So when they talk about democracy, blah, 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 it's all about religion because they chose a global religion there, excluding, of course, every other. Well, it's their permission, it's their country, their continent. So I have no problem, but I'm just questioning what happened to the Protestants and, the Lutheran. No wonder the English wants to leave. You can't stay when you have a discrimination in the European Constitution. Is it a religion freedom or discrimination? It is important to recognize that religious freedom is one of the basic human rights already granted in the documents that establish the core principle of the EU. The European Convention of Human Rights, the Treaty of the European Union, and the Charter and a Fundamental Right of the European Union. They grant an institutional religion, and in particular the Catholic Church, special status with special rights distinct from any other civil society organization created for problem. Well, thank you for that. Well, there will be many things to read here, so I'm not going to bother you, but I want to say something. When they mention in one of those verses that they're going to only cuddle or get closer to only elite communities, that started to sound like very, very German. Okay, so when we say that, I'm saying, do we have a third world war without a war and just a takeover of Europe by a group? Because you cannot understand how they work in this, how somebody can write about the Constitution when you exclude other religion. It's like, all right. Anyway, that was that. I think that we're done with that chapter. Let's go to some music and we'll be right back.
L'amore a cena e tu, dimmi sì, se ti va, il mio letto è forte e tu, pesi poco di più, della gomma piuma.
And that was Umberto Tozzi with two very old 1978 music. One of the successful singers too at that time, and I hope he's still, because he's excellent, his voice I know didn't change. Now, let's talk about this. We had a Swiss Air flight boost Israeli family over autistic child cries. Well, I can understand that the cry of a child on a flight is devastating. I don't understand why we don't have any feature to help them eat. And for some reason, it wasn't safe. And you know what? We don't know what they do. So we cannot say that they were completely wrong. We just have to have a procedure to think what needs to be done. Okay? We cannot blame it on anyone. It's a bad situation. And sure, sometimes the welfare of the rest is overcome decision, and it's absolutely correct. So I'm not blaming it, the Swiss, just because they are, the Israeli. I actually say that both sides were in a dilemma, and nothing you can do to help. You need to start. Start some dialogue about our value as far as going outside our safe haven. And then we have more news. You know, this Abbas resignation from the PLO, that would be a largely symbolic, they say. Do you think he should resign? I don't know what Abbas is complaining. He's old. If he wants to retire, by all means, just let him go. He served. He did his best, and whatever it is, it's good to know that, now they don't have a leader. They don't have a plan. They don't have nothing. They just have Gaza, and they need to start developing it, because Gaza is where they have a free zone, UNRWA, the United Nations refugee camps, facilitator, and I come saying facilitator because they never let them get out of those camps, and thank God they are broke, because if not, they will keep them enslaved in that barricade. Sometimes you help the person and you don't let them help themselves. So let's have a thought, maybe a plan to build those hotels like they talked about in the past, and make the shore look decent, maybe to get some money and make it like the free trade zone for the Middle East, where everything can come there and go. You know, if you have a plan to, not to have a military and just to be as people, all refugees from, I don't know, from where, because most of them are not even from here. So, but, they have space, they can build, they can make work, it's a nice, piece of shore. Israel doesn't have much more to offer to them, that's by all means, because Judea and Samaria is the corridor for Jerusalem in a way, and Jerusalem needs to be protected by her mountain, and Judea is, Jewish, so... Let's not be confused. They can be living there everywhere. Not like Abbas said, the no one Jew. Just imagine the audacity of person, people say to you that they want peace. No one Jew. How dare they? How dare they even talk? No one Israeli will live near the Palestinians. And why? And why? Why? You see? So just remember, in White Hate 1, the resolution that divided the state of Israel to two states, one Arab, one Israel, one Jewish, and Jerusalem is corpus separatus. Jerusalem is international, it means that you never can occupy it. It belongs to Israel like it belongs to the world, they say, but we say that we are the custodian of that and it belongs to God, but we have to take care of it. So when they mentioned that they have, they'll have Israeli and Arab state, those Arab members needed to choose between Jewish state and the Arab state, but they didn't choose. They just ran away from them, and if not, they stayed and they got Israeli ID, and that Israeli ID is really helpful for them to have a life. Because on the other side of the moon that they live there, they don't have a life. If they start, it'll be a good. When the alliance are going after ISIS, gonna hurt Gaza too, probably as far as the forces there, but it's gonna help liberate them too. And it's about time, like they will liberate from UNRWA that control them and all those goody two shoes that play the role, double role, and keep you wondering why, what the heck they're doing there when they give missiles to store missiles for terrorist activity. Now, that is good, but remember, it doesn't forgive. You think you do wrong to people anywhere, and you will be coming back, dancing, forget about it. It's not happening. You will have to make a count in the moment. And we do have. Now, let's talk about something interesting that just I noticed. You know, there is a very nice thing that, you know, that the most of the gadget that you hold today holds Israeli innovation inside. And when people tell you boycott, it's like boycott, their telephone, which is ridiculous. And then there are all those rock groups that come and visit because against the DBS. So we have like a performance after another, which is incredible, and 100 come around and talk, okay? Now, having said that, I learned that, there is one brand that calls Love, Ava in Hebrew, that is all the Dead Sea cosmetics. Just got sold for $76 million to Chinese conglomerate in midst of a BDS concern. Now, $76 million, guys, you should have got more. I hope that they don't have percentage of where the mineral coming from. Anyway, as far as I'm concerned, we just have to work. We just have to keep on going and see that tomorrow is better. And massive action, like Tony Robbins says, massive action. Don't stay put. Just keep on going. Keep pushing. It will be okay. We'll make it through that day. All right, guys? Let's have some music, and we'll be right back after that.
No, stanotte amore non ho più pensato a te. Ho aperto gli occhi per guardare intorno a me. E intorno a me girava il mondo come sempre.
All right, and we are back because we have some sound bites I want you to listen to, and we have Charlie Rose and something interesting I've been interviewing with. All right?
Russia's President Vladimir Putin today blamed NATO ambitions to expand and the United States for fanning the flames of conflict in Ukraine. He did that at an international economic conference held in St. Petersburg. Part of the program featured an interview with Putin by PBS's own Charlie Rose.
And it's seated in front of an audience of business people, political leaders, and journalists, Ukraine. The Russian president blamed the West for the conflict in Ukraine.
And help us understand, as you see it, where are we? How do we get there? And where do we go from here?
Why is there a crisis in Ukraine? I was quite confident that after the bipolar system went into oblivion after the collapse of the Soviet Union, certain Western partners of ours, particularly the United States, were in a kind of euphoria. And instead of trying to create a new situation, good neighborly partner relations, they started to explore new free geopolitical spaces, well, free in their view. And that's why we were witnessing the expansion of NATO eastward.
I spoke to Charlie Rose immediately following his question and answer session with President Putin.
Charlie, you pressed him about what he thinks Ukraine needs to do to defuse the situation. What did he say?
Well, he said they need to talk to the people. The people in Kiev need to talk to the separatists. I mean, that's been it's not a new idea from him. He has always said that they need to have, you know, real conversation between the separatists and, you know, I mean, I think he obviously feels some affinity. And I raised the question whether, you know, were they helping the situation by supplying arms to the separatists, by, in some cases, the engagement of Russian soldiers and other weapons, I mean, other connections that Russia has to this. I think Vladimir Putin, because of all of his experiences, you know, has a real fear about NATO on his borders. He's always had that. They had that with respect to Georgia and with respect to Ukraine. I think he probably worries that if a government in Ukraine was leaning east, it might, I mean, leaning to the west, it might one more time entertain the idea of NATO membership, which he really, really, that's probably the thing that he dislikes the most. I think the headline from this, he really believes that the United States and Russia should be talking, that they ought to be having a dialogue about Ukraine and other issues.
And what did he say about that? You asked him about the increasing tension and the relationship between the West and Russia. What did he say about that?
Most of his animus is towards the government in Kiev. As you know, in previous times, he has said that he thinks that the demonstration that overthrew the president of Ukraine, who fled to Russia, was a sponsored in part by the United States and the West, the US CIA. I think that most people believe that Russia, because of it has regained some of its military strength, and they do rattle the saber a bit, it wants to be a player. They want to be respected, which I raised with him. And he, in a sense, said, well, we are respected. Everybody wants to be respected. You know, but there is deep within him the sense that, you know, after the collapse in 91, that Russia wants to regain its status as a big-time player in the world.
Would you say that being respected or not being respected is a new concern, is a new posture on his part?
The fact that he did say it the way he did suggests that he thinks about it. And I think that pride for him and for other people, I mean, you know, Russia was a superpower. And then with the collapse of the Soviet Union, all of a sudden they were not a superpower. In fact, their economy was in terrible shape, and they had a whole range of cataclysmic changes in their economy and state ownership, and all kinds of oligarchs came forward. And Russia has been, you know, trying to recapture some of its global presence. He cares about borders, he cares about respect, and he cares about conversation. I mean, he wants to be talked to. He wants to be considered a primary player.
Charlie Rose talking to us from St. Petersburg, the site of this economic summit. Charlie, thank you, and travel safely.
Thank you, Judy.
All right, and this is Orly Benny-Davis with The Impossible Truth. Today is Wednesday, and it's Italian Music Day, so we're going to cover some of, we're covering some of the European issues, especially the one in Russia and Ukraine. And as we speak, we got news that in Ukraine, deadly protest outside of parliament over an autonomy vote, which actually put in danger the one Ukrainian National Guard soldier died, and more than 100 law enforcement personnel and civilian were injured, several critically, after a violent protest erupted outside Ukraine parliament on Monday. So it's 2 days ago, but the news, I guess, they're traveling a little slower sometimes when they have inside stuff like this. The idea is, if we are ready to just, you know, put the pressure for them to quit fighting, they need to, you know, resign it and back to their corner. Of course, you the Ukraine war is supposed to end today, and but it won't. That said. Was you said 1 year ago I was in Ukraine when its first ceasefire was signed on September 5, 2014. Well, I guess but a year later and they're still kicking. And we are back. It's Orly Benny Davis with BBS Radio on The Impossible Truth. We are covering news, information. We talk and we play music. Someday we play, on Wednesday we play Italian music like today. On Sunday we play Jewish and Israeli music, trying to get some prayer in the mix. And on Monday, we have all-American, all-English songs, let's say. And it's been a while, you know, since we started doing it. And I feel very confident that we will be going a long way by trying to transform this world. But just remember, there is a God and it's not us. So we need to pray hard for him to help us, to assist, to give us some grace and give the world some patience to solve the problem and to understand that we cannot fight all. We need to start talking. And, you know, love, it's all what we need, all right? So I'll salute you. I love you. God bless you all. Thank you so much, Doug, for your help and assistance today and PBS Radio. God bless you all. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.